Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hennessy Hoffmeyer, and joining me is John Frankenstein Levengood.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Ulrich.
So, what you guys don't know is that for the 5 years that we've been podcasting, we've actually been recording this from a place called Terminal Island. And John is actually a violent criminal. And he has had to serve 200 podcasts that are broadcast all over the world to get his freedom. And he's currently on the 199th. So you're doing good, man. But there might be some weird stuff happening at your house. The computer might go down. We might not be able to finish this. Because, you know, you're my golden goose, man. I get 70 million subscribers paying at least $99 to $250 to listen to this. And if I lose, you know, you're the seventh Frankenstein. But still, like, we gotta keep the thing going, you know? We got to keep John Frankenstein around.
You mean a possible love interest might sabotage me?
Exactly. Oh, man. I got to tell you. So this is the sixth movie in our racing series. And what I love most about it, so far you and I have covered Rush, Driven, Days of Thunder, Speed Racer, Ford vs. Ferrari, and now Death Race. And what I like about this film, Statham gets framed, goes to prison. You have a race in 3 days. The race is 3 days long. That's it. Like, this movie is just meat and potatoes. There's a couple double crosses, but it's just such a straightforward movie. And I dig that even without credits, this is just 100 minutes. It's a quick in and out movie directed by Paul W. Sanderson, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast, John.
We've covered a lot of his movies now, yeah.
I'd say one of our most popular episodes is Event Horizon. And I think that's probably in our... Like, if someone said, Mark, give me a Movies, Films, and Flicks starter pack, 5 episodes, I'd include that Event Horizon episode. I think we...
I'd include... Yeah, it'd be tough to pick 5, but it's a no-brainer that Event Horizon's in there.
Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a good one. But yeah, I mean, this is a meat and potatoes. I mean, they crashed all these cars. They blew up all these cars. There's obviously CGI in this, but this is a very analog, $45 million budgeted remake, or as Paul Anderson likes to say, a prequel. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about this movie? I mean, I was watching this with Megan. She's on this podcast a lot, and she's like, I like this movie. It's just straightforward. And then we watched Death Race 2000 on Tubi. For free?
From like 1975, right?
Yeah. And it made Death Race better because of how, I think Paul Anderson, the completely different plot, but you watch it and it's just so cheeky, and now I kind of understand both movies more.
Was the original with Sylvester Stallone among other people?
Yeah. So, okay, I thought. Yeah, in the original, Sylvester Stallone's Machine Gun Joe. But the thing is, in the beginning of the film, he shoots a machine gun. In this movie, Tyrese plays Machine Gun Joe. But he just has machine guns on his car, but so does everybody else. You never see Machine Gun Joe shooting a machine gun. He's actually better with rockets. His name should be Rocket Joe in this show. I also like that David Carradine was a star of 75 Death Race 2000, and he's the voice of Frankenstein in the beginning of this movie.
Napalm. Oh, he is! Yeah. I didn't know who that was. Okay, I didn't look that up or anything, so that's cool.
Give me napalm. Give me smoke. Give me banana peels.
Give me Mario Kart.
Can I ask you a question, John?
You can ask all the questions, Mark.
You're a death race racer, okay?
Well, we've established that. I need one more win.
One more win. And so people in this car, they have Porsches, they have Dodge Rams, they have Ford Mustangs. I have every single car written down here. They have a variety of different cars in this. So they all of the drivers in this competition drive something different. Frankenstein has a Mustang, kind of stuff like that. Here they are. So you have like a 72 Buick Riviera. You have a 79 Pontiac Trans Am, 1989 BMW 735i. You have a Jaguar, 1989 Jaguar, 2006 Chrysler 300C. What is your nickname? And what car would you pick?
All right. I want a Hummer with a lift kit and giant tires.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
All right. So I did just, you know, big dude's got to have a big car. And plus, it's just a nice, it's very different from what everyone else has. Right? And what's my nickname?
Yeah.
Dropkick John.
Dropkick John.
I mean, that is why I had dropkicked a lot of axe dipping bad guys in my time. And this one time someone set me up and I thought that I was dropkicking someone who was dropping an axe into a poison salmon when really it was an undercover FBI agent. Mm-hmm. And because I dropkicked him and I ruined the sting operation he was doing to try and take down this faction of axe dipping fish hatchery villains, right? I ruined that, even though I was fighting them for all this time before that. That's how they got me. That's why I went to prison. My dropkick was too big. I'm a large person, and it fractured his sternum, and he died.
I would hate to see you dropkick somebody, John.
Dropkick John. I'd hate to land after I throw a dropkick.
Now, all right. So you have the great pick, by the way. I can actually see this in here, because Machine Gun Joe obviously picked the best vehicle, because on Terminal Island, also all of our other movies, John, F1, Indy, NASCAR, Le Mans, and the Speed Racer tournament that they have, the different races that they have, none of those are all about speed. These races on this island are more about muscle, because Machine Gun Joe's never behind anybody in this, so speed doesn't really matter. So
his car kept up suspiciously well.
I mean, do you think the twists and turns and bonkings and I just think you can't really hit 0 to 80 on this track because there's not much room to hit 0 to 80.
So I feel like his car had a little supercharging. He had a supercharged kit.
Machine Gun, he gets it. Machine Gun Joe gets it. So now, John, the problem is, since you killed the cousin of the warden of this prison, your vehicle can only have non-lethal weapons. So you can't pick rockets. You can't pick machine gun. You have to pick non-lethal weapons to be installed on your Hummer. Which non-lethal weapons would you pick?
Okay, so in order to have a reduced sentence, prisoners will volunteer to be trebucheted from my vehicle. And when they trebuchet in the air, they actually drop kick the cars that they're hitting.
Wait, your gang what if your gang just puts people in the trebuchet in between every lap?
That's my primary. That's it. And then my secondary is, instead of like having an extra gas tank I can drop off or something as a trick, I have these mesh bags of just mess hall waste and fish, because we're on an island. Like whenever there's a turn, almost like Mario Kart, I will drop, instead of dropping caltrops, I'm dropping all this slop left over from like dinner the night before at the prison, or I'm dropping a whole bunch of fish. And so when they're trying to do these like Tokyo drift turns, they're just gonna slam through the side. So I'm gonna trebuchet a few volunteer prisoners. I'm gonna do that.
Not the grouper.
I'd like to think also, though, like a semi-lethal, like I'd have a cannon. It just shoots like wooden balls.
Ooh, or marbles.
Well, that sounds devastating, but I'll take it if I'm given it.
Yeah, you get marbles and wooden balls. It shoots them
all.
That's
what I want.
Oh, I love it. You know what I would do, John? I would take a moving truck for my vehicle, and I would load it full of supplies from a home. And when I drive around the track, I just strategically drop couches.
Like furniture, just loads of furniture. Yeah.
Some guys like shoot him with a rocket, and I just drop a couch right behind me, and then they got to swerve. Drop the ottoman.
It wouldn't work on Machine Gun Joe, though. He'd tear through it.
Yeah, I'd have to get a bunch of love bugs from Florida and just swap it on his windshield, because I don't see any wipers on that. So I'd have to get a very viscous, sticky liquid or goo and shoot it at his at his window, because you're not going to wipe that off.
Love bug gleepity glop.
Yeah, exactly. He's love bugging me! Oh, man. But no, so, John, what are your thoughts about this movie, since we've kind of gone all over the place? But what do you think about Death Race, and released in 2008? Yeah, what are your thoughts about this movie?
So, first off, it's the least race movie of our race movies. However, when we were comparing our past race movies and we were saying like how what you learn about the circuit that they're racing, what you learn about the drivers and the lifestyle, what you learn about the rules or the different kinds of tracks, I feel like this movie at least ties for best for yes. explaining all of the rules of Death Race. And it's funny because it's especially complicated that one race is really a three-stage race.
Yes.
But we leave understanding this very well. So that's interesting. But overall, though, like taking away the comparison to the other movies, this is a really, really fun action movie that holds up really, really well. And you commented on the CGI. And whenever I watch a movie, even when it's one that I love, you know, like, you know, Resident Evil, you know, it's like sometimes I actually stop in my head. There's almost a voice to be like, oh, that's CGI. But I still love it. Whereas in this, I didn't find myself actively like catching glaring things. Are there things that were CGI? Like, yeah, and you know they were. But their contrast to the rest of the scene was never even momentarily distracting. So that's really cool, right? And this movie feels kind of timeless because they have more primitive resources available to them relative to the time frame. Mm-hmm. And I really love that it makes me think of so many other movies that I love because, like you said, this is not – whatever. We'll call it a remake, a reimagining, or whatever air quotes thing you want of Death Race. It's the same premise, kind – almost – kind of, okay. But, like, clearly this was influenced by The Running Man, right? And Ulrich, I think, was clearly modeled after Mickey Michael Rooker in Undisputed.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Even though he's slimier. He even looks like he could be his son. Yeah. Like, I feel like that was deliberate. It makes me think a tiny, tiny bit of The Condemned, which came out a year before, about how they appropriate prisoners for things that shouldn't even be their prisoners, you know? And then, like, I love that it makes me think of these things. And it never feels like it's ripping anything off. It just feels like it's doing its own thing with some familiar ideas. And I liked all the performances, too. Really holds up well for me.
Ian McShane, Joan Allen, like the cast is insane.
What's your take on this? Because you probably hadn't seen it in a long time, just like me, before preparing for this episode, right? Like for me, it had probably been 10 years since I saw this, like really saw it through.
I probably saw it in theater, so it's been about 12 years. And I think I probably didn't appreciate it as much as I do now. And I think that's because we spent so much time with Paul Anderson movies. Listening right. to his commentaries and listening to everything he makes. And when I learned this movie, you know, $45 million budget, and I dig watching the behind-the-scenes footage because that dreadnought, they built one and they crashed it. That when 14K dies, when his car goes – his Porsche gets blown up, they blew up that Porsche. When one of the character, the NASCAR guy, I believe, gets blown up, his car goes flying into the air – and that was an accident. They didn't want – no, that was Vargas who goes that high. So they didn't want his – no, I'm sorry. I got to get this name right. Grimm.
Vargas the Reaper?
Yeah. When – I think – yeah, Grimm, I think his name. When his car gets blown up into the air, they didn't want it to go that high. They blew that car up into the air. When that car gets stuck on the spikes during the scene, that guy, they stuck a car on spikes. So they built all these practical cars. They were working. I listened to the commentary. I watched behind-the-scenes footage. They were out there building these cars. They dropped about 2 tons of fake bullet shells that they were shooting. I mean, they had machine guns on the cars. They were practical. They were welded. And I don't know. I understood the race. It's a three-day race. And when you hit a shield, you get napalm, oil, and smoke. When you hit a sword, you get guns, and your weapons are armed. And then when you hit that skull, that's when the big spiky thing pops up. You don't know the exact geography of the track. But you just know stay alive. And you know the rules of the world, and there are no rules. So it's a very – I'm telling you, man, Paul W. Sanderson knows how to – I don't know. It's just easy to follow. This movie is super chill, and I dig the action. And you're right.
I was, I'd almost call it world building, even though that's not literally what it is, right? He's world building. It's just that the world is the prison culture around the race.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I love the world building, and you know, he based it off of Death Race, which had, you know, you have the people in the car with you. Even, all right, so there are like some very gratuitous shots of women getting off of buses, and
Felt like from an old exploitation movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe he was playing with that. And Paul Anderson told a story about how on set, one of the camera ops, she was a female, and he's like, I don't know how to tell her how to shoot Natalie Martinez's like butt, but the camera lady just did it. And he's like, I don't want to be that director that tells her to shoot. It was just a funny story that he told. But you know, but they're like the TV people who watch this. They want to have arm candy in the car, so that's why they bring in the more attractive inmates. So it's like, mm-hmm. even though it is exploitive, like the 1975 film, they at least explain it, right? It doesn't feel overly gratuitous.
Sure, but you know what? And I don't feel like they really address this in the movie, and maybe they didn't think of it. I want to think they would have though. Is that this strikes me as an incentive to keep drivers. Even though it's not like, you know, we're not talking anything, you know, 1% of a conjugal visit, but they get to be around an attractive woman for the course of their races. They get to interact mm-hmm. with someone from outside of, you know, 99% of their prison life who is there to specifically help them, you know, so...
Oh, sorry. I keep interrupting you. My bad.
No. That's I think they're familiar with them, right? They keep getting the same one, and so I think that that's almost like another, maybe not incentive, but it's an added bonus for the drivers. What were you getting at?
No. I think you're absolutely right. And Case, I guess she, even though she betrays Frankenstein twice, she knows what the shortcuts are. You know who's good. So I love that Machine Gun Joe keeps getting new guys, but since they're new, they don't know the track. And they're just wrong, mm-hmm. and they don't want to be there, so they're not good. They always die. But Case, she knows every aspect of that thing. There's a part where she says, in 50 yards, take a hard left. 50 yards, take a hard left. She's actually very good at her job, and I sort of dug that about that character. I don't know, at the end, you know, it ended in the same way as the 1975 with her taking over as Frankenstein. I don't know, I dug it. I think it's a fun movie, and... Also, like, for the 70 million people who are subscribing to this thing, they probably aren't... I mean, if you're watching people die online, you probably want to... I don't know, you want to, you know, see a ring girl, I guess, if you're paying for a pay-per-view.
Sure, no, that's a good point, too. Yeah, that's a ring girl analogy, sure.
I mean, they're still an integral part of the team, but I also did some math. At bare minimum, for the weekend, they'll make $6.9 billion, and at the most, they'll make $17.5 billion. So... For these races that they do, they're pulling in massive money. So no wonder she wants Frankenstein to keep coming back.
Right.
But
right.
I'm sure
we have this privatized prison system, so yeah.
Because it's not government, right? I mean, I'm sure the company that's doing the feed is taking some of the money to host all of this. And you have to pay a lot of money for cars and bullets, et cetera, et cetera. But that's still a lot of money for these races. So you probably, I don't know. I also understand why you keep wanting to bring back Frankenstein. It makes sense.
Well, you never know, though. Like, I mean, because this is just business, right? Because our introduction, by the way, it very specifically made me think of Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's 2020 and the economy has crashed. I guess we didn't have a lot of faith in Obama. We have huge unemployment. Crime rate skyrockets. These are even some of the statements, like the crime rate, you know, skyrocketing. That was an Escape from New York thing. It went up by 400%. Prisons become privatized. Now, if the prison is privatized, right, and it's an island, just like Escape from New York on Manhattan Island, but if it's privatized and at some point she wanted to create these races. Now, let's just say these races, I don't know how many she does in a year, but let's just say these races have only been going on for, I don't know, 5 years, right? That seems reasonable to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's been going on 5 years and they have, you know, a few races a year.
If you think about it, Machine Gun Joe has 4 wins, right? Let's say they race every 6 months. Machine Gun Joe has 3 wins. So then that's 3.5 years maybe already to fix all the cars.
Sure. Right. But like, when she first set this up though, now there was one point where we see the track cut in a cursory way from an aerial view, and it's big. It's probably a mile plus, mm-hmm. right? And that thing had to be paved or repaved, but either way, big job. They had to get the stuff all the way out there on the island. And anyone who's ever tried to build a house knows you get charged differently based on where your location is, significantly, right? Mm-hmm. They had to get new fencing, because it wasn't just the prison now. Now you need the prison level fencing around the perimeter of the track. So, and then you had to get all these kind of mechanic bays and all the parts. But I have a feeling that when this started, when they had this idea, sure, they were a privatized prison and they're making money, but I'll bet that they probably took out, kind of like when a city wants to build a new stadium, she probably took out a $20 billion loan.
I would say that.
Or the prison did, right? So they're going to, you know how that works, right? It's just like getting a home loan. You're going to end up paying $80 billion, even if you're on a really good schedule sometimes, over 10 years for that $20 billion loan. I'm making up numbers, people. If there are any bankers listening, don't go throwing your laptops in the air.
Well, you're renting boats. You're renting you're probably shipping trucks out there. You're renting vehicles to build an entire mile's worth of, well, I guess you're going there and back, but a city block, that's a mile. The concrete, the glass, the iron inside, the jumps. So yeah, I could see that, because you have to ferry everyone back and forth. So, that comes down on the work.
So, like, as much money as it's making, and maybe they only got really, really huge in the last couple years, because they even said they started out with prison fights, and then, like the Romans, they got bored of it, and then they started doing Death Race. Death Race was born. So maybe before it was just a little extra money, but, you know, hosting the fights, that's just a TV feed, you know, and paying for the online sales and things, that was probably a lot easier, but this was an expensive endeavor. So she might have had a lot invested in this. I remember originally thinking, including my first watch for this podcast, thinking, I'm surprised that she was so aghast when they destroyed the dreadnought. But then I also started thinking about the more business model of this. And even if that dreadnought only cost her $5 million to make, she's like trying to use it as a vehicle to increase, you know, ratings for probably multiple races. And this thing just goes.
Yeah. And they had taken months to build in a separate wing. And you had to hire the people to make it. You had to hire the people to get on it, the ammo. Yeah, she took a licking on that one.
I mean, I really shot a low number, though, because I'll bet you had to buy a live cannon to install on that. A live cannon, I'll bet even in today's economy, what is it? Is it five? Is it $50 million? It's going to be a large amount of money.
It's just to weaponize it.
And right, just for that cannon head on the back that got 14K when he was stuck in those chain caltrops. When I saw it, I was like, oh my God, we're just wholesale murdering drivers now.
Paul Anderson brought Robin Schulz in again to Robin Shue to play that, because he was in Mortal Kombat, Paul Anderson's second film. But he made Robin shave his head for this role. That poor guy shaved his beautiful locks.
So he was Liu Kang?
Yeah.
No way! I didn't know that!
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And did you know that his first film, Paul Anderson's first film, was in 94 called Shopping, and it had a lot of car chases. Roger Corman watched it and wanted him to make a remake of Death Race, but it took 13 years to make, which is because Tom Cruise had it. Tom Cruise wanted to star in it, but he didn't like it. He didn't like the plot, the script too much. So then they gave it to Paul Anderson. He wrote the script. They cut the budget from 100 to 45. And he was supposed to be traveling around the world on a massive globe trek. But he's like, I can't do that for $45 million. So they went to Montreal and they just looked at industrial places and made it. And they found that bridge. So that was it. But yeah, that's the story about how this movie got made. Just to let you know real quick.
We totally don't need it to go around the world, though. You know, race movies go around the world. This is its own style, its own circuit.
And it's a smart adaptation, too, because, yeah, the first Death Race went across the country, United States. And this one, I think, this one handles the budget really well, because they go around the same location. So it's not like they had to build too many new locations. So they are able to focus on the practical stunts, the cars, the explosions. I mean, getting a 3-time Oscar nominee, Joan Allen, in to say, hey, you blank, if you blank with me, we'll see who shits on the sidewalk. I mean, that's okay, John. I watched this movie again with every interaction with her just to see if this was a callback to something. And it's not when she says this line. But I'm thinking that since everyone calls her a bitch in the movie, she's saying that they're two dogs and they're on the sidewalk. And who's going to crap on the sidewalk first, since everyone calls her that? Is that what you got out of that line?
I never really had an understanding of it, even though it's instantly funny to me when I hear it.
Like, because that's the only thing I could glean from it, is that everyone kept calling her that. And so she's like, okay, well, we'll see who craps on the sidewalk. Because dogs
see who
poop
shits on the sidewalk.
I guess dogs shit on the sidewalk. It's like a game of chicken between two dogs pooping. And at the end of the movie, if you stay all through the credits, they play it again at the very end of the credit. That was his first pick.
I didn't know that.
That was his first pick for this movie. He's like, I want Joan Allen.
She was great.
Yeah, she's so
good.
She was
like, I mean, it's funny too, and she was great in she was in at least one of the Bourne movies, and she was great. Like,
two, three,
I don't
want to
call it cold, but stolid. Like, she was very stolid and, you know, just CIA business oriented kind of cold.
I like when she's walking through the yard, that an actual warden had done that. So there's a warden that she was the warden of I forget which prison, but she actually walked through the yard every day without a guard. That was her thing. So when Joan Allen did this, I'm like, that's crazy. And I'm like, oh, that's actually real. That actually happened, which made me kind of happy. But how about this? I want to do something real quick. I'm going to interrupt the flow, but we're going to do a quick Joan Allen draft
that
I'll put on Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook. And I vetted this. She's been in tons of stuff.
I need to get IMDb for this. Need to get IMDb.
If you go to Movies, Films, and Flicks, the day after this episode is released, you will see that John and I have engaged in a Joan Allen draft. So, John, since you're looking, do you mind if I get first pick real quick?
You go right ahead, because I always pick two, because you always pick two.
All right, so how about this? I'll get first pick, but then you can pick the next two. How's that sound?
No, it's okay. I'm fine. I'm fine banging back and forth.
All right, I'm going to go Face Off.
Oh.
You can have two. You can have the next two, because that's strong.
It's you know what? I'm just going to take this.
Death Race?
I'm taking Death Race. You kidding me? I'm taking the movie where the badass criminal with all the tattoos over his neck and arms, and that's his real stuff. He gets cast for that. I can't think of the actor's name, but I love it every time I see him in anything. And he's like, oh, she has the best ass in the yard. But he like loves her. He thinks she's like literally a god.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, she's just such a great, smug, slimy yet sleek character. So I gotta go with this.
I love it. Okay, so I'm going to take – there's a movie – oh, wait. Where's this movie at? I love her in this movie. Where is that? The Upside of Anger. I like her a lot in The Upside of Anger. She's really good in that movie.
With Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart?
So it's Kevin Costner and it's Kerry Russell. So the father passed away, then she has the three daughters.
Oh, I'm thinking of The Upside.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of The Upside.
I love The Upside of Anger. So what's your second pick?
Okay, I just want to make sure I got the character right. Was she the mother in The Notebook?
Yes.
Okay, then The Notebook.
Oh, that was going to be mine. That's a great pick. All right, so The Notebook. That is that. Let's see. And then she has three Academy Award nominations. She crushes it. Oh, let's see. Oh, Nixon, Crucible, and then she was also in The Contender. So you know what? I'm not going to pick either of those. I'm going to go with Manhunter.
See, I don't even remember her. I haven't seen Manhunter, though, since the 90s. I see all these great movies, and I just don't know what she did in them. I don't know her characters.
She was a badass in them.
Was she the accuser? I'm going to...
You gotta see John right now. He is focused.
I'm like, but the thing is, like, I see all these great movies, and I'm just thinking, like, again, it's like, God, who? If I could just have like a screenshot, you know, of her in these movies, I'd be like, oh right, her.
She's the mom in Pleasantville.
I'm gonna do basically her from the Bourne movies. But if I have to pick, I guess, you know, so it's the Bourne Supremacy is where she appeared.
Okay, so the Bourne Supremacy.
It was in like three of those movies at least.
I won't do that one then. I'll stay away from Bourne. I will do The Contender. Oscar nomination. Can't beat that.
Was that with Hugh Jackman?
That was
Hugh Jackman?
Russell Crowe.
Oh, Russell Crowe. Okay. Yeah,
she crushes it, man. Three Oscar noms. All right. So I have Upside of Anger, Face Off, Manhunter, Contender. You have Death Race, Notebook, Bourne Supremacy. You're building a strong squad here, John.
Yeah. I see. Like I see Nixon. Was she Nixon's wife?
Yeah.
With Anthony Hopkins? I know I love that movie, but I honestly can't remember.
She was Pat Nixon.
Right. I loved that movie, though. I'm just going to assume she was great in it, so I'm going to take Nixon. You know a funny thing? I've actually loved every single Nixon movie that's ever come out. Like Frost Nixon, this.
Elvis Nixon?
Nixon. There was actually another one. I can't think of who played him now off the top of my head, but there, like, I've loved every Nixon movie.
Have you seen Michael Shannon where he plays Nixon? Or when he plays Elvis and he's meeting Nixon.
That's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah. And then
Love it, though, because you love Michael Shannon.
I'm a huge Michael
Shannon. I think he's great, but, like, I don't have a particular drive to see his movies, that is.
And Knoxville's in it, too, so, like, you can't beat that. All right, so Face Off, Upside of Anger, Manhunter, Contender. And I have she's in Room. She crushes that.
I never saw Room.
Yeah, she's with Brie Larson. Ice Storm, she's so good. Crucible, she's so good. I'm not gonna pick a Bourne movie. That's cheeky. So I'm gonna go. Let's see. I'm gonna go Pleasantville. I love her in Pleasantville. She's very good in Pleasantville.
I was thinking about that one too. It's nice to see her play a nicer character.
Yeah. Yeah. Not steely.
Right. Right. I can't totally picture. I don't remember if she was one of the primary accusers or not. But I just want to give it to her and say the Crucible.
Crucible. Hey, that's an Oscar nom right there. She crushes it. Remember that? I don't know. Remember how much that was? Demi Moore, Gary Oldman. That was a stacked cast.
That was a Scarlet Letter.
Oh, that was it. Oh yeah, you're right. Man, I'm mixed up.
That was a Scarlet Letter. This one is Daniel Day-Lewis, Winona Ryder.
That's what it is. You're right. I mixed up my movies here.
I mean, there were similar era. They probably came out within a year or two of each other.
Oh man, Daniel Day-Lewis, that dude crushes it. So back to Death Race. But if you want to vote on this, head to Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook, like the page, and you will see our poll the day after this episode is released. So you want to hear something interesting, John? In this movie.
I was trying to think of something snarky to say, but
So Jason Statham, right? He had been an action star, obviously. He had been in The Transporter. Very good shape. He had been in other, I guess, movies where he was the action star. But when this movie came out, he cut himself down to 6% body fat. So he got incredibly lean in this movie. And so prior to this, yes, he had been in good shape, but he had never gotten to this shape. And Tyrese was on set with him in one of the behind-the-scenes videos. And Tyrese was making fun of him. He's like, when people see how ripped he is in this movie, he can't go back. He's like, he's going to have to be as ripped as he is. And people are going to see, you were that ripped in Death Race. You can't be that ripped in this movie? Like, you can't do it? What's the deal? Like, you get that ripped for Paul Anderson? You can't do it here? But he was making, so Tyrese was making fun of Jason Statham in this movie because he got so ripped. Jason Statham prepped for this movie by just doing pull-ups, chin-ups, push-ups. So he wanted to do a prison workout. That's how he prepped for this movie.
But Jason Statham has always been a very isometric workout guy.
Yeah.
And a body weight kind of workout guy, yeah.
But in this movie, he's just straight up six-packed. And he said he hated it because he just wanted cake and beer towards the end. And he just had to eat carrots and turkey and broccoli on set. He had no carbs. But yeah, so I thought they showed him eating on set and he was complaining about it for about 5 minutes. But I thought that was funny. Tyrese is like, they're not going to let him go back. I thought that was a good little gag. But he looks, I don't know, Paul Anderson wanted a wiry Charles Bronson, Steve McQueen guy, and I think Statham pulls that off in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anytime Statham's fighting somebody, you buy it. And then I have a question, though. So this is a prison who has billions of dollars, mass appeal, widespread. So they send out an Aryan guy to kill Jason Statham's wife so that he gets framed to go to this prison because he's a former NASCAR driver to take over for Frankenstein, who died because of Machine Gun Joe. Why could they not have just kidnapped his wife and just said, listen, we have your wife. You're going to drive these next few races. You're going to stay here. She will be safe. Here's proof, but you need to drive for us.
If I'm the criminal, though, that's a big loose end. Yeah, and then I have to trust that no matter how much I can threaten them and they can fear for their lives, I have to trust that they won't even accidentally let something out.
Yeah, I got you. So you're thinking.
So I see your point, but you know, it's like it lends itself to the comfort in the sinister behavior of Joan Allen.
Got it.
She's so comfortable doing that, you know. But yeah, it's like I see what you mean. But again, I think she, too many loose ends.
Why did Pachenko come up and try to fight him the first day? So he knows why he's there. Why is he trying to start a fight when he was brought in to do this?
I think he's just a crappy person.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, you can't trust that guy.
Aryans. Mean, he agreed to do this, and I have a feeling that no release papers were involved. I think he just agreed to do this so he could go do something fun and mean. Maybe he got some little privilege.
Oh, yeah, good point. I got to tell you something before I forget. So Paul Anderson on the commentary was telling Jeremy Bolt, who is producer on all of them. Jeremy Bolt's based pretty much on all the commentaries, too. But in this movie, Machine Gun Joe, Pachinko, 14K, Paul Anderson didn't want to direct all the extras. So he said, all right, Tyrese, all right, guys, you know, you're the gang leader. You direct your extras who are with you.
Oh, that's cool.
But the funny thing is, so the producer, Jeremy Bolt, was like, that's a really smart idea, Paul. But then Paul goes, well, not really. And we didn't tell you this. But when Tyrese started directing all of his people and Pachinko started directing all of his people, all of their scenes, they had to have their people. So that costs us more money. Because if we just had a scene with Machine Gun Joe and Gunner or Jensen, then that's the two of them. But Machine Gun Joe always wanted Entourage with him. So Tyrese became really tight with his on-screen gang. And then they had to show up more in the movie, and that got them paid more. And then the producer, Jeremy Bolt's like, well, crap. He's like, how much money did we pay these guys for this? But I think that's a fun idea. He just got the head of the gang to direct his actors. I thought that was cool.
I think that's cool, too, because it gives different personalities to them more naturally, right?
That's just a funny idea. What did you think about Machine Gun Joe in this?
I thought that this was Tyrese Gibson's like least interesting character ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like the character isn't really interesting. But then again, Pachinko isn't interesting. Like a couple of these characters are more devices than characters, right? But I even thought that he did as well as he could have with his material, but his performance does not resonate, you know, it doesn't stick to you. It just seemed a little, I don't know. I don't know if the word's basic, simple,
blah. There's not much on the page for him to do, right? But you watch, you know, you watch Baby Boy and you can see that the dude can act.
Baby Boy. Yeah.
I watched Black and Blue recently. You can see he can act. In the Fast movies, the dude can act.
His Fast movies, yeah.
So he's just a ball of fun. Paul Anderson loves having it on set. He's like, he's the coolest dude you ever meet. But
and that's the other thing. This is the one, even in Baby Boy, even though that wasn't at all a funny movie, he whines about things. He gets in situations that are dangerous in Baby Boy, right? They feel more lethal than the Fast movies because you know they're going to live, right? But in Baby Boy, he gets into some serious trouble, like some crime-like trouble. And But when he whines about it, you know, every now and then you get a couple laughs out of some things. When he's running away from getting his ass whipped, like you get some laughs. There is not like a laugh to be had until like he's basically threatening the life of the person sitting next to him in the car.
Yeah, he kicks that guy out and kills him. And then
that was funny to me. Like, boom, he just hits some like pile on. But yeah, he doesn't get a lot. They totally had him not being the kind of roles that we know he's good at.
Do you think that's maybe why he took it? He wanted to play something different?
The movie's not
about him, right? I guess the movie quite isn't about him.
I have a feeling that he took it more because it's one of the higher build characters in a movie with a whole lot of characters.
One of my favorite things, though, is when his crew just shoves that guy into his car and the guy's trying to fight.
Right, he's trying to get out. Yeah.
Then they lock him in there. So in this movie...
Don't disappoint me.
In the beginning of the film, let's see, Frankenstein kills his co-driver when he lets go of the big shield behind him. And then one of his drivers gets blown up by a rocket, or passengers gets blown up by a rocket. He kicks the other one out. Now, he loses these things pretty... That driver, though, that he has in the beginning, in the second race with Statham, that guy's not very good. Oh, yeah, there's a shield up there. I was wrong. Like, that guy wasn't – he wasn't 100%, was he?
No. But again, he had never done this before. Yeah,
he did not want to be there.
But also, forced. He did not seem very invested. He didn't seem to care about them. Yeah, sorry. I guess it was already taken.
They kicks him out of the car.
And kills him.
Oh, man, that thunk is so perfect. Oh, geez, always. All right, so, hey, let's do something real quick. Let's take a quick break, and then we come back. We will talk more Death Race.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper?
a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions.
18+. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. John, do you want to know why the cinematographer, the director of photography, Scott Kevin, got the job for this film? Do you want to know why?
Was it something he did with Paul W.S. Anderson before?
So he actually shot the movie Stomp the Yard. And so he shot this movie Stomp the Yard. And before it, he had shot Cabin Fever. He had done a couple other films, A Bug, which is a bonkers film. So he came from a horror background. But Paul W.S. Anderson watched Stomp the Yard, and he loved how aggressively he filmed the dance scenes. Because in Stomp the Yard, the dance scenes are very...
I love it. It's energizing.
Yeah, they film like an action scene. Like, dancing films like action. So Paul W.S. Anderson being... I'm telling you, dude, this guy's smart. And I hate how many people crap on Paul W.S. Anderson. But he's like, if he can film a dance scene and make it look like an action scene, what can he do with our races, because we want to do something different? So he brought in this guy to shoot this film because he loved the way he shot dancing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it makes me very happy. And also, the production designer, he worked on this movie, and then he went and worked on Three Musketeers. He's actually worked on three movies with Paul Anderson. So he went and did Three Musketeers. He did Pompeii. Paul Anderson loves him. But... So he's done two movies that I think have amazing production design. He did he won an Oscar for The Shape of Water, which $20 million movie. And that's another fun episode of ours. $20 million movie, and the production design's beautiful. I mean, it's a beautifully designed film. And he also did 30 Days of Night. He built an entire Alaskan town in New Zealand and built all the sets and made it look like an Alaskan town. I mean, that's a very beautiful film to look at. So this guy is now an Oscar winner, but I think he'd been working a lot before this as well, but I loved his work on Death Race because, you know, all the guys who built the cars, all the sets, I think they really built a strong thing. And also, you know what's funny, to save money? They just ordered all the outfits for the guys were ordered from prison wholesalers. So all the outfits that they wear were from prison stuff. They went really cheap on some aspects, but I love the production design on this movie. And like you said, I think there's a certain timeless appeal to it because it's very analog, very nuts and bolts.
Yeah, like, I really thought that watching this for our episode I knew I'd still like it. I knew that. Like, it's a Jason Statham movie, right? I'm always going to like it. But I did not think I would still love it. You know what I mean? Instead of loving how much I liked it.
You know, it's funny. That's funny. I like that you said that because there's movies I know that aren't good, but I love them. I think this movie is 42% Rotten Tomatoes. It's the second highest rated movie, which makes me sad. 47% is Mortal Kombat.
Resident Evil 1?
No, I'm sorry. Mortal Kombat has 47%. No, Resident Evil 1's below that.
God.
So I don't think people...
And Event Horizon is still below 50?
Below that, yeah. And, you know, James Cameron was just sticking up for AVP, and James Cameron loves the first Resident Evil, which makes me happy. But this is a movie, I don't know. What I like, though, is it's 100 minutes, very, very simple story, good actors, practical effects, gets it done. It's fun. And I think it gets its own humor, too. The scenes where the ladies are getting off the bus, they get that humor. So I kind of dig that. The one thing that I liked about the original Death Race, it was two women drivers, two men drivers. But I guess you can't do that in a maximum security prison with dudes. You can't bring in, I guess that's the one thing. But other than that, I mean, this is a good film. It's a good action film. It's good to put on, watch. You know, it's funny, Megan was watching this in the background, and she went, I like this movie. She just started, you know, have you ever background watched a film, and then you realize, I like this. And then you just watch it. Has that happened to you? That happened to her. And it was fun. It was fun to do.
That was actually what happened to me with She's Just Not That Into You.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Or no, not that one. I'm sorry. She's Out of My League. I never thought I'd like that movie. And one day I was folding laundry and I put it on like 20 minutes deep. And I watched 10 minutes of it. And after just 10 minutes, folding laundry though, not really paying close attention, I immediately changed the channel, went in the guide function to see when it was playing next so that I could watch it later that day.
Is that the one? That's the one with T.J. Miller in a Hall & Oates cover band, right?
The star is Jay Baruchel, yeah.
And Alice Eve. Yeah, that's fun. Yes. And Kristen Ritter's in it too, being sassy.
I thought that movie was way better than, I don't know if I want to say than it deserved to be, but way better than I absolutely expected it to be. But yeah, that was like one of those where you just like, this is really working. Yes. So there, some of the things that really worked for me, by the way, is that, you know, a movie like this, like, you don't expect this to be like your Rush, like your Driven, like your Days of Thunder, where there's such good vibing chemistry between you and your head guy, you and your manager, if you will, like coach, you and your pit crew. You don't expect to have good symmetry between the bad guy and the bad guy's henchmen. They had a good relationship, right? You don't expect to have a lot of minor characters do things that are funny that you also think were done well, like Grimm reacting to the warden in the prison yard and all of his apotheosizing her. Again, the dynamics between Joe and his history with his navigators, if you will. Like there are a lot of good, really rich relationships in this, and that really pushes this higher than I think people realize that a movie called Death Race with Jason Statham starring would be.
Uh-huh. I love when Liss tells Statham to go get some sleep, and then Gunner comes in, played by Jacob Vargas, who I love in Devil. He's like, good, I'm glad you got him out of here. He's terrible at welding. Like that's
terrible at welding.
I love that little, there's character beats. And also there's another scene I like in this film where Hennessy, dude, I don't think we struck Jason Clarke, the star of what, Dawn of the Planet of the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, this guy's a Pet Sematary 2. He's a proper actor. I like when Hennessy, Joan Allen, tells him to leave. He doesn't go, he just leaves.
Like, well, you can see in his face, though, he's a little surprised and he's a little, I don't want to say disappointed. He wants to be there by her side.
But he doesn't make a scene out of it.
Right. And he's professional about it. Yeah.
I know that's something weird to like in this movie, but she wasn't like, get out of here. So she's like, leave. And then he is disappointed.
And take so-and-so with you.
Yeah. Right. And they leave, but he's bummed, but he listens. Like that's a little moment I like.
So he's got a lot of those though, even though most of the time we see him separate from Hennessy, right? We see him reveling and mistreating the prisoners when they're onboarding, Jason Statham into the prison. Just his attitude. He was hoping that Jason Statham got the crap kicked out of him when they put him in the prison cell. He was disappointed when it didn't happen. When everything goes wrong at the end and they're escaping and Hennessy is like, cut off the feed, cut it off. She didn't say anything to Ulrich. Ulrich then responded almost like it was like his wife. Guys, shut it up. Like his reactions to that, especially though, like he was panicked that she was panicking. He was upset because she was upset. And when I think about that, and I think about the scene that you were referring to earlier, I wonder if he doesn't love her.
Oh, he loves her.
I mean, right? Just he loves her.
Yeah. He's
there's never been a word spoken about it, clearly. But he, yeah.
Yeah. And she has no interest in the guy, but she knows he loves her. But she's good to him, I guess. She trusts him too, though. Right. She never chastises him.
And he was in charge of taking Pachenko out to sabotage Statham's life.
So that's how you get good employees. You trust them.
I'd say so.
No, but it's just these little moments. And that's another thing about Paul Anderson films where he does Resident Evil. He gets Mila, but then he gets Michelle Rodriguez. He gets Oded Fehr in his later films. He gets Ali Larder. He gets good names. The dude from Game of Thrones who's amazing, who's in the later Resident Evil movies. The other dude from Chernobyl. Jared Harris is in the Resident Evil movie. Paul Anderson, Sanaa Lathan in AVP. I think he just brings in good actors because he knows that makes his jobs that much easier. It's a smart move. And I like, and they, I think they add to these tiny moments, which I really dig. Now, I got a crazy question for you, John. Crazy question. There's a death, right? So there's a death race.
Well, I'm in it. It's my 200th death race.
Oh, wait, the internet's going down. But see, the... Oh, wait, two of our episodes were bonus episodes. This is your 198th. I'm so sorry. They don't have numbers, Nick. So you're
no
stuck
release
with
it. Papers now.
No, there is a death rate. Who wins? We're sticking to the rules of this film.
Okay.
Speed from Speed Racer. Uh-huh. Niki Lauda from Rush. James Hunt from Rush. Cole Trickle, Days of Thunder. Jimmy Bly, Driven. Joe Tanto, Driven. Ken Miles, Ford vs. Ferrari. Frankenstein, Death Race. And Machine Gun Joe from Death Race.
Okay, I'm honestly saying either Niki Lauda or James Hunt.
I knew it.
They are just... Even though one is more instinctive and one is more intuitive, Lauda can get right in there and help work on that vehicle really well, right? And he's smart, he's methodical, his emotions don't come into play. I think he'd be cool under pressure when the shit's hitting the fan. Whereas James Hunt, he's more reactive, but he still knows something about the cars. But he's more reactive. I think his charisma would help him survive also the downtime. If you will. Whereas, like, you know, Speed, he's relying, he comes from a totally different kind of race with totally different kind of vehicles and no sense of danger.
Yeah.
It's safe.
And he's not a murderer.
I got
my money on Ken Miles, John, because he drove it. In the movie, they say he took a tank across, Africa and Europe during World War II. He's great with cars. He has that killer... He'll throw wrenches at things. He's good at mechanics. Yeah. He's a good racer, and he survived World War II. So I'm going Ken Miles. I don't want to see any of them die. I think do you think Cole Trickle is gonna last?
No. I think his attitude alone, he won't even survive his way to the race.
What about Bly or Tanto?
No, Bly. Oh God, Bly's
done.
Forgive the statement, but Bly's gonna be someone's bitch by lunch on the first day.
Tanto?
I think Tanto would be smart enough to lay low, and he would become kind of like your coach.
Oh, good call.
I think that he'd go coach.
So one person. You have to pick one. So only one person from Rush can win.
Okay. I'm going to say Niki Lauda. I think that's the more practical choice.
I'm going Ken Miles, but I like Niki Lauda. I just think Ken Miles because of the World War II. That's the one. I guess that's.
He's seen some hard times.
Yeah, so he kind of knows, and he's just super wily. And yeah, Lauda's all about safety. So I think he would prepare a very safe car if a rocket hits from this angle. if the only way the rocket can blow this up is if it hits from a 17-degree angle and then knocks this out. But I don't know. But no, I that was fun. So I want to do something too. Rank these movies, John. This is our sixth racing film. I want you to race them. Rank them.
Is it me, or is it so appropriate that Death Race is the final lap because on their final lap, they escaped the race?
Now we're done. Can you believe? So I remember when you pitched this to me. I can't believe we're done with our racing series, John.
Right, right. And we didn't necessarily just do racing pods every time we podded, yeah. Right? We got other stuff in.
It's weird, right? We're done with our racing series.
Right.
We did it.
Yeah. It had to happen at some point, man.
And we're moving on to Nose next. So that Nightmare on Elm Street next. So
A few of those. I've got a series in mind again, though. I've got a new series in mind, but I don't want to get into it until we get through.
Saw?
No. I don't mean a series of movies with all the sequels or all the franchise. I have an idea for another series like the race series.
Oh, I like it.
But I don't want to get into it. I don't want to say it and have listeners anticipate it and then wonder where the hell it is. You know, we've got a lot of stuff we want to do. And even when there's a team of what, like eight podcasters now for MFF, it's like you still never get to cover even as the sum of us, right? You still don't get to cover all the things you'd want to cover.
Yeah.
So it's like got to pick some battles. The race pod was one that, you know, brimmed at the top. So, you know, I'll package mine sometime mid-year, my next series idea. Unless you have one too, right? I don't know.
No, I'm up for anything, man. I like talking about what people are passionate about. It makes my job easier.
All right, so my rankings, and I made these rankings because I knew you were going
to
ask.
I already have your number one written, so you want to move on to number two?
I made these rankings, and I want you to know that today, before we potted, I looked at them, and because it's a different day, no joke, my list I was totally confident in, I switched three things.
Oh, wow. But not your number one.
Not my number one. Mark, what's my number one?
Rush.
Of course it is, right? It's just the best. Do you know what my number two is?
Oh man, I don't want to guess. I really don't know. It's Driven. That's what's funny. I don't know.
I'm going Driven.
Oh, Driven. Nice. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Today, I've done this before. I did this at least one other time when we were doing our rankings. I'm ranking purely on my emotional fun or elation while watching them. Or just emotional response. So Rush, Driven, Days of Thunder, Death Race.
Whoa.
Ford v Ferrari, which is fifth. It doesn't, listeners, it doesn't mean that I don't think Ford v Ferrari isn't wonderful. It's just, this is how I'm ranking it today.
But you're not Speed saying Racer. Best. You're saying...
Right. The bottom is not the worst. I'm just, this is just in the order of how I enjoyed them emotionally. So yeah, Rush, Driven, Days of Thunder, Death Race, Ford v Ferrari, Speed Racer.
You ready for my, you know my number one.
Are you going to say Ford v Ferrari?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a I really think Ford v Ferrari is a perfect movie. I think it's perfect. Two is, you know my number two.
Wait.
You know
is
my number.
Is it Rush or is it Speed Racer?
Rush.
Okay.
Rush all day. All right, so three. Oh, this is tough. Okay, for movies that I would just put on, Death Race, hour 40 minutes. Four, Speed Racer. I love it, but it's 2 hours and 15 minutes long. The slog. Five, Driven. Now, I've enjoyed all of these films, so don't think I'm saying what I hate the last. And six, Days of Thunder. I've enjoyed all of these. Yeah. So if someone just said to you, Mark, which one do you want to put on right now? I'd be like, oh, Ford v Ferrari, immediately. And then what next? Rush. But yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, that's what I like about the series, man. We're different on our rankings.
You,
that's what's
you
fun.
You know what else though? Like if someone said, "Yo, John, which of these six movies do you want to put on?" And it was a Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m., it would be more like a Rush or a Ford v Ferrari.
Yeah.
If it was 8 p.m. on a Friday, it's more a Death Race.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking? Yeah, it's like that can totally change what I want to see too.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All right.
Is a woman asking me? Is it a date? Oh,
Rush. Oh, you have a date. Rush. Oh, yeah.
Rush or Ford v Ferrari. But then I want to go with the powerful film, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It's so many. Did I meet her at a con? Oh, there's a good chance it's Speed Racer instead. It's
Meg's top three. I asked her Ford v Ferrari. And then because she watched all these with me, she said Ford v Ferrari, Rush, and Death Race. I'm telling you, man, I had Death Race on. Jeez, I like this movie. It was kind of fun to watch. But yeah, those are her top three. Because, listen, Ford v Ferrari, I think, is a perfect film. But it had a $100 million budget. Rush had a $35 million budget. And it looks beautiful. So
like the
which
most budget of all these movies.
Which movie do I respect the most? I would have to say Rush, given its $35 million budget.
Right.
But
right.
What's my favorite? It's Ford v Ferrari. And which one do I think is? I mean, Death Proof, $45 million, dude. They made this movie for $45 million. That's not much, if you mm-hmm. come to think about it. And what I like about Death Proof too is, Death Race. Oh, Death Race.
I mean, it's your love of Kurt Russell was just bleeding into this podcast.
Death Race is. I feel like you see every dollar on screen. So that dreadnought, when it wipes out.
Oh my God, it's so cool when it wipes out.
Badass. Like that, and you see the little CGI guys flying. And they trashed that truck. They destroyed that thing. They built only one of them. And that smacked into that. And
that moment made me think of some of the best wipeout moments in Fury Road.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. And that's what Anderson said on it. He loved Mad Max. So he put the dreadnought in it. And then it's kind of funny because obviously the Road Warriors, when you really get those big trucks in the film and the chase scenes, but you watch Fury Road and then you watch Death Race. And if you hadn't watched, you know what would blow my mind, John? Someone had never watched the second Mad Max 2. It's Mad Max.
No, it's the Road Warrior. And then it's Mad Max. And then it's Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
So you see that. Someone had never seen the second Mad Max, so they didn't see those big trucks. They're watching Mad Max Fury Road, and I just wish someone in the theater was like, "They stole that from, they stole that from Death Race."
Right?
They look alike. Like it's a cool, I don't know, it's a good practical bit. I love when 14K gets blown up. They blew up cars in this, which I love, and you can tell they blew up cars. So I dig that. I like.
I even like the improv moment where the NASCAR driver gets killed, Travis Colt. I dig when he's like, sit on my lap. And everyone's like, what? And Natalie Martinez, and Casey's like, what are you talking about? And then they throw that out and blow him up. I dig it.
The way that Ian McShane looks over his shoulder at the rest of the pit crew when he just hears that, get in my lap.
And Megan made me rewind a scene I didn't see where Ian McShane does a sassy eyebrow raise. Like, that's why you hire Ian McShane, is for those sassy eyebrow raises, for those looks that he gives. No, I dig it. And the one part, I want to talk to you about this. There's a scene where Jensen Ames, Frankenstein, wants to kill Pachenko. So instead of getting a shield, he gets an automatic weapon. And he puts his car in reverse, shoots Pachenko. But then he spins...
They're shooting at each other.
Yeah, they're shooting at each other. And he can't break his armor. But then he flips around and he puts smoke in Pachenko's face, in his car, and then Pachenko wipes out and then he kills Pachenko. But why did he need the guns? Did he need the guns to... What's the point of that scene?
So if I'm trying to rationalize this, I got two options. Either one, he thought the guns would work out a lot better than they did, but that's the boring answer, right? Two,
that's funny.
That engaged, baited, goaded Pachenko to stay right on him. That way, when he got the shield and immediately turned around, maybe he knew the shield was coming right before a turn. Mm. Maybe he did that again to force him to stay engaged instead of him trying to maneuver or do this, that, or the other. That would have been a risky long game, but maybe it was something like that. So that he'd definitely be close to him. And then he will have goaded him, because now it looks like Frank is retreating when he turns around, so he's going to keep staying on him to shoot, right? Then he throws out the smoke. Then the turn comes. Pachenko's gone. Well, I mean, not dead yet. Frank finishes him himself.
Yeah. No. All right, you sold me. That makes sense. I was kind of reading the situation, though. Like, I don't really get this, but no, you got me.
It would have been, you know, this is one of those things where one line of dialogue would have gone so far, even if it didn't reveal what his plan was. He's in reverse shooting. Case is yelling, what are you doing? He's like, just 10 more seconds. The turn is coming.
Yeah, I'm taking his mind off
then
the road.
Then he turns around. Then he gets it. He shoots out the and then after it happens, like, she's, like, you know, with her arm over the seat, like, leaning back against the door looking at him, like impressed. Like, he's learned the track. He's been paying such good attention, you know?
And that scene...
Well, one line could have gone a long way right there.
We need to dub that in, John. Make the cut. Right. Associate producers.
And the MFF cut.
I like... Oh, that'd be awesome. We need that up Deep Blue Sea, too. And I like the scene where he finds out that she's been lying to him and he threatens to pull her ejector seat inside the warehouse. That's a gnarly threat right there.
Right, yeah. Launch her right in, crush her in the ceiling.
But the thing is, you get it. When Case, you realize that, Case doesn't care about this guy. She just wants out. Like, this is a new dude. She doesn't care, right?
Well, she couldn't have cared that much about Frank either, because she was willing to screw him over pretty bad.
But I guess, like, that just adds to her... I don't know, looking out for yourself. I dig that. I don't know. I dig it, though. I was like, oh, how dare her. I'm like, I get it. Like, they're prisoners. It's cool. She killed her cop husband, who's a bad... Wait, he's a good cop, bad husband?
Mm-hmm.
This was her first movie role.
Yeah, but you see, people want to assume that he beat her or something. He might have just cheated on her, and she might have just murdered him.
Yeah.
We don't know why she's there. This might not be some innocent thing.
Yeah, maybe she shouldn't have been out of prison. That could
just
be trouble.
Just because at the end she's you know, pulling a Michelle Rodriguez in like Fast 6 or 7. Or, oh, now I don't have to get fat and I can still be a mom. This is so nice, or whatever that she was doing at the end, right? Like,
yeah.
But like, we don't know what she did. She might have tortured her husband to death.
I mean, she's not above having other people die.
She might have been wrong about whatever she thought made him a bad husband. He might have been going out, like, working extra shifts to try and save up to get them something or to get her something. And she thought that he was two-timing her, so she just blew up his car. Like, we don't know.
This
could go deep. She was willing to to double-cross Frank, and he died.
And then she was willing to double-cross him again.
And then she was willing to double-cross him. Like she...
I love the end, too, where she comes up in her car and then the music starts blaring and she gets the other close-up. Like, that had to have been done as a joke, right? Just to... That's,
I think,
not,
it's just
serious.
You're getting out of the car again. Yeah, I think they're just calling back.
Oh, and also when Jason Statham, or when Frankenstein had to get out of his car to kill Pachenko, it took him about 10 times because of the way the door opened. It made it impossible for him to look cool stepping out of the car. So they showed him trying to step out of the car to look awesome, and he'd like fumble around because just the way the car was set. And he was a diver, so the body manipulation, he knows how to hold, and I mean, to be a diver, you got to know how to like position your body. But he couldn't figure out how to get out of this car.
And he's a very adroit martial artist acrobat too. You know, it's like, I mean, yeah, I get it.
And the stunt coordinator on Spy, huge name. I mean, this dude was the stunt coordinator on John Wick 2. I think his name is Perry, his last name, but he also did Haywire. He said that Jason Statham's the best actor he's ever worked with stunts. But Statham had trouble getting out of the car and looking cool. It was a nightmare. It was funny to watch. He's like, ugh.
I'm glad it wasn't me then. What if it was one of us? We're just like stumbling around. We literally fall on our butt.
Trying to get out. Oh, man.
And then like after you fall on your butt, you just kind of stare at the camera with this defeated look on your face.
I need a stunt double here. Get somebody in for me. I can't get out of this thing looking cool. But it was fun. It was kind of fun seeing him get flustered on that and kind of watching that. I dug it. But no, man, I'm telling you, this is just you see the effects, you see the explosions. I mean, I guess in the beginning, I don't know, the wife thing, I guess that's not played. How does he get his daughter back?
We're just waving our hands and assuming he did it.
Yeah.
I can't assume it was legally because he broke out of prison and he's in Mexico when we find him, so it's not like he cleared his name. I think he baby snatched. I think that a couple of adopted parents are heartbroken and scared. I'm not trying to soil the ending of the movie here. I'm just saying, like, I think he baby snatched.
And Machine Gun Joe, 70 million people have paid for these streams. He can't go anywhere in the world and be anonymous.
That's a. I mean.
John just froze. So I've been doing this.
If he just grew some hair. No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
If he just grew hair and got, you know, I think that's all. Because you like, if I shaved my head and went to work, a lot of people would just like have a moment where they're like, "Who the hell was that down the hall?"
Yeah.
You know. So I think something like that would go a really long way. Of course, up close though, when they see the scars on his cheeks, so he'll need to get some plastic surgery for that. That's the real tell.
Oh, man. You're right. Because he's every single driver that dies, he does it. Oh yeah.
But, you know, whatever. They're if they stay in Central America or something, you know, I imagine there was less viewership there, just financially speaking. Maybe that's a good place for them to be.
No, you're right. That's a good point.
But if he grew hair, like they're never going to see him dressed the same. They're used to just seeing his face anyway. You know, he gets some money. He, you know, wears a suit.
Yeah, no. All right.
That could go a long way. And Jason Statham gets some hair. Like in Spy when he had... Doesn't he have a wig in one scene
yes.
in Spy?
And the mustache. Oh, my god!
Like, no one would ever know it was him.
I got to tell you, two movies that I really enjoy feature ejector seats and Tyrese. Too Fast, Too Furious, and Death Race.
I love, by the way, that both these guys ended up in Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah, I just mumbled there, but I like seeing him back. I'm kind of bummed that Statham went off with Johnson. I'd rather see a Shaw and Roman film. That, to me, would be a lot funnier.
Shaw would hate him. He'd be ragging on him, like, the whole time.
So Shaw would hate him, but Roman...
Or not hate him, but he'd be constantly annoyed, I should say. He'd be constantly annoyed by him, right?
Do you think he would respect Roman's abilities?
No, I don't think he respects any of Roman. I'm serious. I don't think he respects any of his abilities.
He even gives Hobbs a ton of crap throughout Hobbs and Shaw. So there's no way Roman's getting anything.
Right.
Except for in Fast Fate of the Furious, where Roman gets off the door and stands up and just guns down three snowmobilers like they're nothing.
It looked ridiculous, though.
Yeah.
He looked lucky. He usually, again, like we've said it before, I mean, he's basically Kurt Russelling it. He's failing up when things work out for him.
Yeah, you're right. And he can't even get away with stealing cigar cutters. And Too Fast, Too Furious. All right, so any final thoughts, any notes, anything else you want to chat about in this movie?
It's just such a fun movie. And you know what? I say that about a lot of movies that are dumb. And we called this like meat and potatoes. This is not a complex plot at all, but this is not a dumb plot. This is a basic plot that is very smartly delivered, even though it's no highbrow movie, right? And it seems like a dumb theme if you've never seen the movie before. But again, it's like this is all executed really well. This is a really fun movie. I'm going to call this. This is a good action movie. It's a good movie.
Yes,
it is. It's enough. We're not putting film with any adjective for this, but it's a good movie. And if people haven't seen this, I challenge you to not enjoy it with a couple friends. Like, really, I challenge you to not enjoy it. You'd need to try.
I think people try to go into this movie watching it ironically because, oh, Paul Anderson did it, like Jason Statham. But this, like you said, Paul Anderson knew exactly what he was making. He knew what he was doing. He made a $45 million action film with explosions and cars wrecking and a dreadnought blowing up. I mean, that's what he wanted, and the movie is successful, and the plot is there. We know what the race is. We know aspects of the race. We know it's 3 days. We understand the plot exactly. There's good actors in it. And thus, so this movie does everything to tell you a story, and you understand the story and the aspects in it. That, to me, means it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a so bad it's good. It's not like, oh, man, I'm so surprised it's good. Like, just it does what it does, and it's good. It's fun.
And I smile a lot, and I laugh a lot, and I'm never, even though there's eye-rolling content if you just read a script page, I never roll my eyes when I'm seeing it executed on screen.
Yeah, I agree.
It's all done well.
Well, this is the end of our racing series, man. What are your final thoughts about our racing series? Sum it up in 7 words. Six words.
No, it's been a really, boy, here's a new way to use it. It's been a fun ride. I've revisited a lot of movies other than the new ones. Like, I've revisited a lot of movies that I'd probably be content to have remanded to laundry folding or cooking in the kitchen and picking up wherever it was on. And it was really nice to revisit all these movies because a lot of them were, you know, even though I knew that I loved them at one point, I still really appreciate them a lot more than I thought I would. You know, it's nice getting those satisfying revisits.
No, and I got a chance to watch Days of Thunder for the first time ever.
Wow.
During this, I got to revisit Driven, which I remembered loving in 2001. I'll use any excuse I have to watch Ford v Ferrari and Rush. I got to watch Death Race again. I got to learn more about Paul Anderson movies. Speed Racer, I actually grew an even larger appreciation. You know, since the episode hasn't come out yet, but we'll have when you listen to this, but there's all these articles out now about how Chad Stahelski and David Leitch, the guys who have done John Wick 2, Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2, John Wick, John Wick 3, they learned how to really tell film on Speed Racer. That really influenced their filmmaking. So just all the love around Speed Racer, no, I dig it. This has been a really fun series. So once you're finished with this, if you haven't, if you're a newer listener, go back and listen to our Resident Evil series, because we talk about all 6 of the movies, tons of research, a lot of weird conversations that are very fun, a lot of cheap glass, John, in the first Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
That glass just explodes. But you can hear that conversation there. But this is fun, man. Thanks for recommending this.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for John Frankenstein Levengood, who still has 17 episodes left, I just found a loophole. This is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.